Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Sings, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. My name is Matt Mayer, a.k.a. Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes. No. It's the bumper WrestleMania episode. Double the length, double the power. cut that. Talking WrestleMania Saturday, WrestleMania Sunday, and the Raw after WrestleMania. So there's a lot to get through. So let's just flipping get to it. Let's jump on over to XL in Philly, extra large in Philly. Cold Philadelphia. Living in the UK, we work in Celsius, so him talking about it being 50 degrees Fahrenheit meant absolutely nothing to me. I googled it the next day, and whoo, that is chilly. that is cold. Anyway, without further ado, let's play the clip from night one of WrestleMania.
Once to the sky in Philly!
Said this one is for you, Mama Rhodes. Got the people's elbow cover by The Rock. Cody is screwed.
Cody's lowest point, the greatest mountain to climb. Roman Reigns and The Rock versus Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins doing exactly what I would have wanted it to do. It's what I've been talking about for weeks in terms of what I wanted them to do, just narratively, just putting that wall, an insurmountable wall for Cody Rhodes to somehow try and climb. For me, I thought this did an absolutely amazing job of setting up what happened on night two, because I wanted that Avengers endgame feel. I really, really like what they did here. It was absolutely perfect to set up that feeling for night two. So let's quickly just go through what happened on night one overall. I felt like was not the best paced WrestleMania night. Night two is the one where people talk about being one of the best WrestleManias, and that's where I feel like, how do we actually talk about the two night WrestleMania shows? Well, the night one I thought was very badly paced. I was really struggling. There wasn't just the Jey Uso Jimmy Uso match that I was getting tired through as well. I even struggled in the main event. The rest of the show kind of tied me to a point that when they slowed it right down in the main event for the villains to chat their shit and get on top, I was just really tired. Whenever it got slowed down in the main event of the second night, that wasn't happening. And that for me tells me a story of a much better paced show. Because it was still like 2:33 a.m. over here for me. I was going to be tired regardless. But on night two, I was like wide awake during the main event, whilst on night one, started to get a bit sleepy. That's the story of the overall show and the effect. Because that happens with AEW. As much as I love AEW, I very often get tired during their main events just because it's been so many great matches that at that point I'm just a bit tired. It has to be something truly special to keep me like wide awake at that point. But here, for WrestleMania Saturday, each lad with what felt like a 5-minute entrance to really set the stage. I was predicting it. Rich Latta in the chat, whilst we're watching the show, he had his timer out. I was just like, we haven't even had entrances yet, and we're already at like 15, 20 minutes or so after the last bell rang. I think it was 45 minutes in the end, from the end of one to the other. Each lad getting 5 minutes. I thought the babyface would get like a slightly shorter entrance, but oh my god, yeah, they're pretty long entrance run for all the four competitors. It was a match where it was wreckage in your final third, but the first two thirds were just kind of boring. I'm not a massive fan of like the brawling out into the crowd. As an adult, I've seen enough walk and brawls where you need to do. To be fair, like Roman and Cody on night two, where they went up onto that little platform and then they did a suplex. I was like, you know what? That was more than what The Rock and Cody did in the crowd. They did a proper walk and brawl, properly attitude style. And I was like, you know what? Is it on purpose to bring up that feeling of the attitude era with them walking and brawling just like that, as much as they would do back then? Just because it is The Rock that's doing it, and Cody's entire point is to break past that. So in his biggest mountain to climb moment, he's got to directly face the attitude, one of the Attitude Era's biggest stars, in order to do so. It's like a little sub-narrative that I quite like. Teasing, getting each lad a little dance with each competitor before taking us into a whole walk and brawly brawl, Rock and Seth into the crowd. This is the kind of shit that killed during the Attitude Era. Back into the ring, our villains spend a good quarter portion working down at Seth, knowing the big bucks is Cody and Rock, and doing all of the tricks to keep the two apart for as long as possible. Cody and Roman getting a stretch, previewing us ahead of the second night, building to Roman taking both the stomp and the crossroads, only for Rocky to drag out the referee. If the ref tells him no, board member Rocky will fire him. Rocky getting his welt belt to bring his promises to fruition. A number of the crowd clearly just here for Rock as a section of boos as he flies with a damn great Cody Cutter counter to the people's elbow. Night 1 and Night 2 couldn't be any more different. I always feel like the people who bought tickets for Night 1, there was a greater portion who had just bought tickets to cheer The Rock, the guy that they knew. Night 2 was people invested in the story. I felt like it was very, very evident by the different crowd reactions. Everybody was there on Night 2 for Cody. Roman hitting an awesome spear, just on the wrong lad, as he crashes into Rocky, setting up Cody and Seth taking the fight to the Bloodline lads. Looking like Rock may have won back in, only for Seth to chop block from behind to set Rhodes to hit a rock bottom through the announce table. What did he be teased on Raw? Immediately followed by Roman spearing Seth through the barricade. In the aftermath of the wreckage, Cody and Roman went at it again in a more direct power-up for Sunday night, but that worked as a misdirect for Rocky to whip in with the belt. Huge spear to Cody, and the end was nigh. Rocky in to finish the job, beating Rhodes up, nailing the rock bottom, and People's Elbow for the win. Cody taking the pin, allowing for the camera shot, mirroring last year. Cody sitting there with his knees tucked up, his head on his hands. As you see in the ramp, Roman celebrating, the camera shot establishing the sheer height of the mountain that Cody must now climb. The result, exactly how I would have booked it. The match itself for me like was what it was, but the actual like narrative booking is exactly what I would have done. Like all of the results coming out of the match are what I was hoping was going to happen. This was the setup for Night 2. And we all know how Night 2 went. So it was absolutely perfect. Unfortunately, for the format of this show, I've got to go through the rest of WrestleMania Saturday before we get to WrestleMania Sunday. But everything that this set up was bang on perfect for what I wanted. In that manner, I can't applaud that side anymore. It's just what I would have done. So I'll give it a glowing review. However, for the actual quality of the match I was watching, I did start to zone out during the middle. Wasn't super invested in the walk and brawl. And when it started to kick up, I was finally into it in that final third. The final third of the longest ever match. Second longest match in WrestleMania history. The longest match in WrestleMania history that wasn't an Iron Man match. Like, when the match is that long and I only enjoy the last 10 minutes, like, you're not New Japan. You can't get away with that shit. Yeah, so I don't give the most glowing review to the actual watching experience of this match. But in terms of the building block it was for the overall story for all of WrestleMania, what it was for WrestleMania Night 2, I can't applaud it anymore just because of it did exactly what was needed. Did exactly what it said on the tin, Ron Steele. Don't know if that's a thing in America. Just a shame, you know. It was like 30 minutes of just pretty boring. I was very much bored. Like half an hour. And that's after 40 minutes of it taking it to actually get to the match. Then it starts and it's 30 minutes of, it's not my cup of tea. Anyway, in terms of the rest of WrestleMania Saturday, Triple H was the first music that we heard after the anthem. Cole saying we should call this the Triple H era. Hunter out to announce the welcome to WrestleMania. On Night 2, it was the surprise of Stephanie McMahon. And at the end, we saw Cody hugging Nick Khan. Like, I more saw that as quite a bold play. I don't know, is it a bold play to feature the CEOs named in the lawsuit so actively in these powers of positions? Or is it a perception play in a manner to position them publicly into those positions of power of we are the ones giving you this good thing? Create that bond, that sentimental bond between viewer and the creator. But they are still CO1, CO2. I mean, that's my main thing is, this is all happening in the middle of a lawsuit which isn't against Vince McMahon. It's against Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and the WWE. It's going after the whole culture there. Dana Brent's lawyer is making that abundantly clear every single interview she gives. And WWE has now shown some of those people in this position on this show, which will create a bond between viewer and creator. It's all purposeful. It's all done on purpose to create that bond. And it works. And they used highest point of fan investment to do that, to give the other people that Triple H feeling of that bond. People aren't in the clear yet. But I said interesting. It is done on purpose. They have now created that bond. It's all been done on purpose. In terms of like matches I want to talk about, I'll go down in order of the ones I want to talk about. So first, the Intercontinental Championship. Gunther versus Sami Zayn. The perfect match for me to just kind of like get back into gear of talking about wrestling after just having that little breakdown moan. The ultimate babyface Sami Zayn getting amped up by his wife and his kid. Like, can you get any more pure babyface than that? Then he bumps into Chad Gable backstage, then Kevin Owens. Triple H and the creative team at the moment, they know how to write this babyface. Sammy hyped and taking the fight to the long reigning champion. When he's talking to his wife and kid, and then Chad Gable, then Kevin Owens, that's all in one shot, following him through backstage and Gorilla, then out onto the stage, bringing that production that we've seen him on Night Raw over to WrestleMania. This feels like an era of just listening to your creative and production people's decisions. Like, who would have thought that would make a much better creative environment just to calmly actually listen to your creative of people who've got those minds and know what they're talking about? As the match progresses, Gunter's chest is just as red as Sammy's. Graves doing a great job of setting the champion up as a man whose frustration usually comes out in deadly controlled anger, right before the man flies in with a huge dropkick and powerbomb for a nearfall. Gunter, with a rare lapse in concentration as he went for a second corner splash just for Sammy's wife. Instead, Sammy running in with a haluva kick for another nearfall. The match probably getting heated up in the second half. Sammy kicking out of Gunter's powerbomb yet again as the Austrian's frustration just grew. Every move followed up with chatting shit to Sammy's wife at ringside. The mistakes are being made by Gunter. He's at ultimate peak cockiness. He's doing what he was able to do to Chad Gable. It's that repeat thing, but Zayn has been training for this. He's been amped up for this. If Zayn's not going to give up, then he's just going to keep on clobbering down with our poor Gunter. The big splash to Sammy, and he doesn't even attempt the cover. Gunter using this to make a statement on the grandest stage, hitting a second big splash, and not even going for the pin again. On the ringside apron, going for a third, Sammy amps himself and haluva kicks the lad on top. One hell of a brain buster onto the top turnbuckle. That execution was sublime. When he hit that move at like 3 a.m. in the morning, whatever time it was, yeah, I made way too much noise when he hit that brain buster. The champ rightfully after that sent Groggy stumbling into the opposite corner. One haluva kick, two haluva kick, and the 666 day champion was down for the count. 1, 2, 3. Sami Zayn is your new champion. For me, this was match of the night, not even close. A really great match, which should be no surprise for Gunter. He is that great. And for me, this is absolutely everything in proving Gunter's elevation to a main event star. After doing so well as the Intercontinental Champion and making Sammy look amazing here as well. The Women's World Championship opened the show. Rhea Ripley faced Becky Lynch. Becky with a big augmented reality version of her book to epic music, flicking back over her career as she read out excerpts. Best promotion for a new book coming out is to have a big massive CGI version of your book and we all read it a bit together, using that for her to then walk through the pages of her book. Now it's set the stage. Ripley with the special live band performance as well. That was the only band performance of the whole of WrestleMania. One thing into the production was the special 4K cameras in the ring for the introductions. Made WrestleMania feel that much bigger. Having those cameras specifically for these introductions just made everything feel like... That's one thing I was predicting when I was talking about it last week, was what I would expect from this kind of production era of WWE was that they don't just film it like they would normally film something. You've obviously got your standard ways of filming, but they will up other areas. And one of those areas was, we got a big expensive camera in the ring. Make wrestlers look amazing as for the title matches. Commentary hitting hard on the fact that Becky had been ill all week. These two were so damn great together. A really strong opener. The quick back and forth sequences in the latter half, so great. The speed of Lynch really matching well with Ripley's power. Ripley rampaging so impressively, but Lynch was continuously kicking out. Rhea herself continuing to make life hard for the Irish lass. A great reversal of Lynch's top rope leg drop into the prison trap. There wouldn't be the last great reversal in this match. Lynch with snap offense, whilst Ripley kept slamming her down with the power. A great armbar reversal with Ripley lifting Lynch up into the electric chair spot, then both going over the top rope and remaining in the spot to hit that electric chair fall onto the ringside. It's one of those spots where I've seen it attempted loads of times. It normally goes wrong at some point. So the fact that it didn't go wrong, it looked great. It positively speaks to both of these women. But that story of Becky not giving up kept on playing, snapping back in yet again with another great counter. Up in the corner, going to hit a super manhandle slam, only to get countered with a riptide into the top turnbuckle. Devastating. Followed up by a second riptide for the win. Rhea Ripley getting a dominant looking win, in spite of the fact that Lynch really did give her a proper fight. It was a really, really strong opener. Rhea Ripley comes out of it looking like a star, been a champion now for over a year. Lynch did an amazing job of elevating Ripley on this huge stage as well. They were trusted to get everything going, and they absolutely nailed it. And carrying that momentum, well, WrestleMania Night 1's on a great run at this point of the show. Raw and SmackDown, Tag Team Championships, both on the line, both in the air, on separate hoisted things. you take one down, and you win those championships, and then you have to take down the other one. A far enough distance apart where it was believable you wouldn't grab both. You would have to go for one, and then reset the ladder to go for another. But it was also a six-team ladder match. We're like, 12 lads, that's a lot of boys. So we had Judgment Day. We also had extra boys as well. People who weren't the original boys came in to help out their boys. So even more. So we had Judgment Day versus DIY versus Awesome Truth versus New Day versus New Catch Crew versus Theory and Waller. In terms of entrances as well, DIY with a fun full-on DX entrance. Xavier bringing back his Consequences Creed look. It wasn't Consequences Creed, but you see him in the America dress. It's like, no, Consequences Creed. So many men, so many spots quickly playing out. This was pure chaos, but it was orchestrated in a way which just kept its own momentum and never lost itself, which is really impressive when you got 12 boys to organise. Tyler Bate with a great spin spot, both Finn and the ladder across the shoulders as he span around. A lovely double moonsault in stereo with Dunn off of a big ladder at ringside. A totally unique launching as Priest razor-edged Dunn into the ladder that Bate was climbing. Bate fell on Dunn and somehow both men were fine. Like, Bate didn't break his leg trying to alter his fall, didn't land so hard on Dunn and did something like, somehow, absolutely fine. Right into Truth Comedy, calling for the hot tag and the Philly fans eating it right up. The crowd all there for Truth's Cena tribute, winning his own little match. AA into the ladder, 1, 2, 3. Good for him. Good for him. A smart moment as the two teams, DIY and Awesome Truth, realise they can just each take a set of titles and both win. That moment of decision costing them as Theory and Waller just running and steal the titles. He could have just done it. They could tell at this point they're kind of having an absolute blast, like a full peak energy for this match, so loud as well. Also, talking about the things the crowd love, tables! Hooray! There you go, Philly. McDonough out to save his lads, and he's the one to pay the price. New Day interfering and crashing him down through those tables to his demise. He landed with quite a thump. Priest made to look damn strong, Razor's Edge crashing poor Kofi onto a chair, taking out Miz, and setting up Truth, costing Damien his moment. R-Truth winning at WrestleMania. It finally happened, but utter chaos, utter fun chaos. Nobody felt out of place. Like, you weren't any complaints of, oh, I wish they would have been in this match. Like, no. It's absolutely fine that all these guys are in this one, and a tag team one is absolutely perfect for that. You've run that risk possibly with a singles title. With a tag title, yeah, sure, whatever. What are you going to do? A tag match? Who wants to watch a tag match? Next up was Rey Mysterio and Andrade versus Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. Would you believe that transition might have been scripted? A quick lucha tag, getting on with it. That's my kind of stuff. An awesome double crossbody off the apron with little Ray Ray on his tag team partner's strong shoulders. I assume that was the vibe they were going for with that. After that, slowed things right down. Eventually kicking back into gear with flippy shit. Everybody gets their flips and dives. Wild getting his big jump practice down in NXT on the big WrestleMania stage. I did pop for that. A sudden ending you could have never predicted, though. A Deus Ex victory as Escobar calling for Dom to get the chairs actually calls for their ends. As the LWO had two big former NFL BMLE lads ready to clobber, setting up our 619 and whatever Andrade's calling is DDT in WWE now. The babyfaces get the win. I'm not American. I don't watch the NFL. I knew the NFL guys because Pat was on commentary going crazy for first. Like, oh, that's where these guys were. But I don't know these men. To me, these are just ordinary men. I do not know who they are. But they were big. They look like former NFL players, so they've got that going for them, I guess. But yeah, this was just a fun little tag match, nothing crazy. But that match and this next match, I didn't have a lot of investment in. Whilst this one was more just getting on with it, which is a very different story for this next match. Jey Uso versus Jimmy Uso. We've seen quite a lot of titles and things just asking, where did this one go wrong? For me, it's kind of like, this is the match that they were always going to deliver. When you booked this match, this was always what you were going to get. So I'm not surprised by this in the slightest. Like, if you've watched either of them wrestle, especially as single stars, this is the match you're going to get. I was never expecting anything different. Like, every time I've done a brother versus brother match, it's been exactly what you would think it would be. Which, for the hearts, is to an absolute classic benefit. But with Uso's match, that's more a bit of an issue. So this was WrestleMania's third brother versus brother affair. I've already brought up the other two. But how was this one? Well, it certainly was. I will give credit. Lil Wayne playing out Jey Uso was such a great visual of the whole crowd moving with their arms up and down with him. That was a great entrance for Jey Uso. Jimmy healing it up and getting dived on. Jay with the immediate fire before good old Jimmy slows things right down. And in the last match, they slowed it down, but they managed to win me back. This time, they slowed it down and lost me. Yeet, no yeet, joining chance for the strike exchange. I did enjoy that. but super kicks galore as the lads with the same offense challenge each other to give me that shit like it's New Japan fighting spirit. I'm just like, oh no. Jay, having completely won the superkick fight over his brother, completely stutters when Jimmy feigns surrender. Bad Uso not able to put away good Uso with the splash. The crowd didn't really buy it, which kind of hurt the match a bit. On the second occasion, Jay doesn't stutter at all, winning nice and clean with no interference. I'll give them pop for that. They actually had these brothers just fight each other. There's no bloodline interference because this is a personal matter. I like that side of it. Also, you've got to save that shit for later. They are going to fight each other again. We're in a bloodline scenario, so you can hold that back. But I saw that people did not love this match. Obviously, you got the odd person being like, I didn't mind it. I don't get why people didn't like it. In terms of like my review, in terms of why would I give it quite a low score, it's a very simple and basic answer, which doesn't always need over-explaining because I feel like it's totally understandable at like first face notice of it. The reason I didn't really enjoy this match is just because I was just bored. I was just bored watching it. There's not really much else I can say. Roman has got a way of bringing me back in. When he slows it down, what he's doing at least semi keeps my interest, or as his character or his opponent's character or something. A layer is being built when Roman chats his shit. It's not just shit chatting. Whilst this time, the crowd didn't buy the Jimmy fake winning fake out, and that really did hurt. That kind of like was meant to be like the pace explosion happening at the end after you pop out of the slow drawn down. What came first was the yeet no yeet chant. So the fans were having fun doing their chants, but as a viewer, I was quite bored. And for me, that's just, it just didn't really do much for me. It bored me, so I was bored. And therefore, I didn't enjoy the match. It's not much more deep than that. Not every review is super deep, breaking down each and every point. There maybe is a time for that, but my immediate review was, yeah, it just bored me. End of. Move on to the next match. Damage Control. Kabuki Warriors and Dakota Kai versus Bianca Belair, Naomi, and Jade Cargill. Bianca, Naomi, and Jade with an awesome grand WrestleMania entrance together. Really enjoyed Damage Control's entrance as well. I will say that was something that was really on point for this WrestleMania, where not only did what the wrestlers were wearing feel special in that WrestleMania way, in the way they did their entrances, it was the way they were produced and filmed as well. They all felt grand and special. And especially on night two, you got some amazing camera work with those entrances. Bianca getting her awesome white hot run. At one point, attempted to score a pin on all three of the opposition at once, because she's just that good. But trying to tag in Jade gets her caught. A lovely little manipulation to get the crowd to chant, "We want Jade." Cargill getting her hot tag too. Big booting the poor lasses, catching Kairi. An awesome looking driver to Dakota. Asuka just making things worse, spraying the mist into poor Kairi. A great KOD from Bianca took her out. Then Cargill in to hit Jaded on Dakota for the win. And it did absolutely everything that he needed to do. Kind of setting up for Damage Control things to maybe go a bit wrong, because we've got the happening night two to come as well. You've also got the elevation of Bianca Belair looking amazing. Naomi gets her... She didn't really do a lot in this match. At one point, this issue had so little, I just think, did she ever tag in? But she definitely did. She was just the... To be fair, like Dakota took a lot of Jade Cargill's offense, so Kairi didn't get a lot of shine either. One person from each team seemed to just a bit more in the background than the other two. However, the actual main thing here is you are building Belair Cargill long term. So it makes sense to make Belair look as amazing as possible and then have Cargill be as dominant as possible. So you've built them both up. We are doing that at some point. Anyway, with that, let's get the clip loaded up. Whatever clip I use, it's going to be a loud cheer of some point. Every single time that the Rocky has made an appearance on one of the shows and there's a huge crowd pop, I really struggled to not just use Rocky's theme. whenever I've played a clip, I've shown some restraint if it's not been Rocky's theme playing. So for WrestleMania Sunday, let's jump over to one of the biggest stadium pops I've ever heard. I've decided, I know what it is now. I know what it is. Let's play the clip of Cody Rhodes winning at WrestleMania.
Plan B. And now Reigns setting up Cody Rhodes. Cody caught it. Rhodes middle of the ring. Crossroads. Cody's not done yet. Cody with another crossroads. Is he going to do it? Can he do it? Is this the Rhodes moment?
Here
and your new WWE Undisputed Universal Champion, Cody Rhodes. He's finished the story. He's done it. It's all over. Within bloodline rules, nonetheless, when the mountain was the most difficult to climb, he got in some friends and he overcame that mountain. I thought it was an absolutely electric main event. The thing that stood out for me, I was enjoying the match anyway, and then it happened and it came out. Because I was talking about with the main event of night one, when they were doing the stompy stomp chatting shit beatdown, I was just really tired. Obviously, I'd been tired by other matches early in the show, but I wasn't tired at all in Roman Reigns Cody Rhodes. I was fully invested the entire time. And then there's the final 10 minutes of everyone running down and all the interferences. The Avengers ending that we were all calling for. The thing that makes me laugh is with everything where they're kind of stopping using the term sports entertainment and pushing towards it. Michael Cole at the end just screaming that I love professional wrestling in an emotional way. That's quite. It's just interesting when they delivered one of the most sports entertainment matches at its purest form. Because it's tied to Vince, it makes sense to step away from it. And that helps kind of build the atmosphere of this is this thing that we love as a fan base, WWE kind of embracing that. Also, in terms of like embracing things as well, I was a massive fan of the way that the match was done at the end with all that presentation. I saw some critique of Samantha Irvine with her. When she did announce Cody, she's like really emotional. For me, the reason that I didn't mind it was because it wasn't planned, but it added to the exact emotion that they were trying to get out of the viewer. So when you have somebody giving that emotion when she's her voice is wobbling and she's struggling to announce the winner, that adds to the emotion you're trying to get the fan to feel. It wasn't on purpose. It wasn't bland. She obviously wasn't able to announce the name because of her genuine emotion being that invested. It's not a critique of, do you want your announcers to be involved in the emotion rather than get caught up in that rather than remaining like professionals saying the name properly. Like, in this very specific moment, they wanted you, the audience, to feel that overwhelming notion of the emotion. And Samantha doing that was an on-screen depiction of it. So it was absolutely fitting in what they were depicting. No critique at all. It's absolutely a positive. Because it specifically added to the specific emotion they wanted you to feel. You would put that in the movie. You have somebody in the person in the crowd shouting it out like that. It was a really good little note. I've jumped ahead to the ending. Because obviously that's like the obviously headline grabber most momentum stuff. It is like the feeling and the rest of the match. I've delved into like the different productions and feelings of it. Both entrances, so damn good. Let's take it step by step. Let's stop dancing about him. Yeah, the entrances, both of them, epic on another level. The way they were both filmed, so incredibly impressive too. Especially the sweeping shots for Roman, as they captured the whole stage-spanning orchestra that played him out like a Dark Souls boss. The Rock was calling himself the final boss, but when Roman Reigns came out on night two, you felt that in your soul that this guy was the final boss. It's all down to the production and the way that they staged it all. And Cody as well, with the battlefield overcome, essentially, and getting you behind his cause. The crowd was so damn amped, at peak volume for the bell. I've already talked about how I much enjoyed this match compared to Night 1, but I also enjoyed Night 2 a lot more overall as well. It was a much better paced show, meaning I had a lot more energy for the main event, and then the main event itself was really, really strong. No DQ established quick, setting us up for a pure sports entertainment shenanigans. Give me what I want. Shout out to the disaster kick caught into a powerbomb spot. Looked awesome. Kind of expect it to get lost in the rest of the flow of what happened. But a shout out to that movie, counter movie. It was really well done. A faster first 15 than we're used to under the usual Roman flow. A prelude to the chaos as Cody showed his ability to rise to Reigns' level. Roman hitting one hell of a crossroads, Cody able to amp himself up so strongly amongst the atmosphere, bloodline rules brought to the forefront, Cody was going for the announce table and instead getting a punch to the dick. He goes through the announce table, back into the ring for a Superman punch, a sequence shifting us into the next act, the finishers spammed, Rock Bottom countered into Rhodes hitting a spear, the story evolving that Cody simply isn't going to be able to be put down as easily as some of the other lads Roman has faced. The first 20 minutes, no interference. This was 20 minutes, just a solid wrestling match, and I was really enjoying it. Then the shenanigans begin. First, Jimmy out with a super kick. So we hit the same notes. Jimmy's out with the super kicks to stop the crossroads to Roman. When our first Avenger saves the day, brawling on the ramp before Jay hits one mighty spear flying through some tables to the side of the ramp. And it's a big WrestleMania ramp as well. It's this moment where they're doing their brawl and then suddenly it's a, oh shit. They just fly off the ramp. A great flow to the match at this point as Roman uses that distraction to hit a spear of his own to a near fall. A distraction flow that's worked so well in the past. But this is the end game. So many great spots showing Cody's fight. A This Is Awesome chant right at the start of the chaos. Crossroads finally hit 25 minutes in. No hesitation going for the trio this time compared to last year. Every single time he goes to the crossroads, he's going to hit the trio of crossroads. No hesitation. When out comes Solo, just like last year, repeating what happened last time, convinces us into that flow of, okay, what does Cody do this time when it all starts to happen again? Into phase two with a kick out. Solo the man calling for Roman to finish the story, which is an interesting dynamic. Roman like, I know! Amping up into a spear and another kick out. Wabadoo! Look to your left because there's a person there. John Cena evening the odds. AA to Solo through the Spanish announce desk. If you smell... Chance of holy shit as Rock and Cena stare down. We wind back the clock a full decade. Cena swings into a rock bottom and down he goes like, oh, well, he took out Solo and immediately just whiffed it with Rocky. Wait belt off when Sierra Hotel Echo Delta Lima. No, the other way around, isn't it? Because that would be Sheddle. Out comes Sheddle Seth. Straight into a Superman punch. And this caused a lot of discourse. The first part of discourse was how many of you just completely forgot for a second that Dean Ambrose was currently John Moxley in AEW and WWE AEW do not have any form of working relationship. But Seth comes in straight into a Superman punch from Roman. It was just that quick. Like a huge pop for the Shield theme. And then just immediately just, oh, okay, he's down. But the way that I read it, oh, of course Roman would be alive to that, where he stops Seth coming in to attack The Rock. For him immediately reading it, I really did like, and I liked it even more when he's got the chair later. Then the gong sounds. Lights out to a thunderous pop. The Undertaker with a chokeslam to Rocky. Out go the lights and back he sprints. But there's a hilarious video of the crew following Undertaker as they kind of escort him back out through the building. And just the way that Undertaker's running is it's just really funny. The chair Rollins brought in, now wielded by Roman, with Seth out on one side of the ropes, Cody out on the other. Roman can either rip right into Cody and win the match, or it can get ultimate retribution on Seth. And he decides to take payback on Seth. Instead, charging to spear Roman, crossroads capture, a second crossroads, this time no one to stop the third, 1, 2, 3, to one of the darndest pops I've ever heard. Sold so damn well by Samantha Irving's voice, breaking as she announced it. Current babyface is also out. They all spill out in like a little mirror to when Dusty won his first title as well, and he got lifted up on the shoulders of all the other babyfaces. The Rhodes family all in to celebrate too, calling for the mic like we're in the Tokyo Dome, asking for Bruce Pritchard and Triple H to come on down. That last final reminder of this being a new era. And this is what I talked about, where it's directly tying the emotion to the people behind it. You have got that bond now. You directly link Cody's win and the emotion there to these creative people. When I watch this stuff, I'm just like, this is proof of how good Cody is as well, by the way. Just because none of that is off the cuff, off the moment. Oh, I, as champion, just want to do this huge emotional thing. I just want to say thank you to these people. It's directly doing what it's doing. There's a reason he hugs Nick Khan out there as well. There's all a reason for it. All of these people get so tied to it. It's all orchestrated, which tells you as well how good a performer Cody Rhodes is, that he made that feel as natural as he did. He is such a good performer. And he obviously is like the top guy for WWE. Just makes so much sense. All done really well. The camera panning out to show the whole arena on their feet in one hell of a shot and visual. I would give it 5 stars. I really, really enjoyed it. Anyway, in terms of the rest of the show, Trips with the first pop Saturday, and Stephanie McMahon got the first of the second. I've already talked about that in a bit more detail. Her theme's now mixed up with guitars. So you can thank Def Rebel for the good work that they're doing. Not the only thing the McMahons are mixed up in. For the second night in a row, we're reminded we're in a new era for the company, because this is the Paul Levesque era, not that other sex trafficking guy. Yeah, he always sucked. We're moving away from him. He always sucked. The opener for the show, though, was the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. Do you like your wrestlers giving a bunch of finishers? Do you like your wrestlers with a bunch of finishers ready to spam? Then this was the opener for you. Both lads getting a big WrestleMania entrances. Drew with his bagpipe parade. Seth with a mass Philly parade of people all dressed extravagantly. CM Punk on commentary. Wasn't as great as I thought it was going to be. Like, honestly, on my bingo card for WrestleMania, I did not have Snoop Dogg outshine CM Punk on commentary. I did not have that. Obviously, his character purpose served off well. But on actual commentary, I was like, oh, you're not actually doing that great a job here. Drew nailing a claymore immediately. A really fast pace to this one, playing off winning the Slammy for best social media lad, as Drew takes a phone from his wife to tweet from ringside. I love that. I think the tweet was something like, bored at work, lol. Or something. A match with both lads just spamming the finishers. It definitely hit a point of they're just hitting the same move over and over. It's not going to bring me in. Seth nailing stomps early too. Wrestling like they've got little time, so let's get all of our shit in fast. Also, a lot of that time was booked for the Money in the Bank cash-in. So this entire match was given a set amount of time to take place in. But that obviously includes entrances, but it also included the Money in the Bank cash-in and that celebration. So this match has got properly shrinked down because of other stuff that needed time to take place. That said, they did just do a finisher spam match, which it's not my cup of tea, but seeing the reception to this match, it was a lot of other people's cups of teas. But when your own finishers aren't working, what do you do? Drew immediately sets up for a different finisher, eyeing CM Punk, going for the GTS. And the character note of this, the hypocrisy of getting distracted by other fights nearly cost him. And as a character note, and the fact that he just cannot see that was happening there, oh, I love it. Instead, flowing into another claymore kickout, Seth nailing another stomp, this time on the announce desk, but as soon as he rolls in the Scott into the ring, the big lad rolled right back up and flew in with a claymore to another kickout. I did like that kind of flow, the way he hit that one. Yet another claymore off the ropes, and McIntyre is champion, soaking in the fans' reaction, celebrating with his wife, presenting the title to her on his knee, and then rubbing every ounce of it in CM Punk's face, just like stood crouched on the announce desk, just taunting him holding that title. The taunting finally breaking Punk as he attacks him with his arm brace, outruns Damian Priest, catching in Money in the Bank, and CM Punk's reaction to this has turned into a meme, and I'm all here for it. The VO one definitely got me. Cashing in Money in the Bank and new WWE World Champion, Damian Priest. I will say the way that it's passed over to Damian Priest, it doesn't feel like a world championship, but obviously this is like day one. You can elevate that over the course of time. Because Monday Night Raw had a lot of focus on Cody, he felt like the top champion, and Damian Priest feels like a more second tier champion. Obviously, over the course of time, that will find its balance a bit more. There's also that point that I would have liked to see Drew McIntyre just hold the belt for a bit, but I also understand you're getting close, dangerously close, to Money in the Bank again. I would have liked to see Drew as champion, but I did say before WrestleMania that his character is so strong that if he just runs straight to CM Punk Championship or not, I'm going to be invested. After that was the Philadelphia Street Fight, the Final Testament versus Bobby Lee Lashes and the Street Profits with B-Fab. All the bells and whistles, Snoop Dogg on commentary, it was such an injection of fun, I really enjoyed him on commentary. Bubba Ray Dudley, the special guest referee, oh that's why he's been so anti-AEW with all that nonsense stuff. Well, he got the WWE paycheck and he's right back into it. This match was a fun plunder for the masses, not gonna lie, just had a ton of fun with Snoop on commentary. I saw a lot of people crapping on this match, but like, quite genuinely, I just had such a fun time watching the plunder stuff with Snoop's commentary that I didn't mind. It was just a silly fun plunder and I enjoyed Snoop. Straight into the action with the tables out. The villains get no pop for their kendo sticks though. Like, what's up? Why no kendo stick pop? A big pop for Montez flying over the ring post. An even bigger one with Bubba putting his glasses on. Scarlet and B-Fab crashing off the apron to not much of a pop, which then bubbled into a soft holy shit. It was a unique reaction. It's not often I've heard a table crash get to next to no pop, which then bubbles into a holy shit. That's very strange. Biggest reaction of the match was all three faces playing Bubba's D-Von. Just don't read too much into that. don't read too much into that. And you know what they say? Never work with kids or tables, as the table for the match ending spot immediately broke under Cross's weight. Like, oh well. So the lads just set up another one, regaining some fire with Ford walloping Cross with ignited energy with a kendo stick. There's your kendo stick pop. Frog splash from on high for the win. And yeah, just a bit of fun, isn't it? Nothing crazy. LA Knight versus AJ Styles. AJ put on them working boots for the Rising Star. Like, hey, you don't nickname a mid-carder the Megastar. Or do you? You WWE. You do whatever you want, pal. But still, this was like a vehicle for LA Knight. Knight getting his big WrestleMania stage. AJ getting flashbacks with his WrestleMania match met with turn the lights off chance. AJ even taking an Avalanche German off the top with a full rotation onto his tum-tum. Body drop on the exposed floor on the outside tonight, but a vehicle for Knight this was. Knees up off the 450, then the phenomenal forearm cut off, BFT for the win, and the Slim Jim sponsorship win. One thing I will say is this is the only match on this night that I kind of zoned out a bit during. I wasn't massively super into this one, because one bit different from night one to night two is the match immediately afterwards brought me right back in, and I really enjoyed both the next two title matches. So first, Logan Paul versus Kevin Owens versus Randy Orton for the United States Championship. That's right, I'm just moving on from my AJ Styles. I don't have a lot to say about it. It wasn't that interesting, is it? This one, though, was exactly what I hoped it would be. The veteran, the workhorse, and the dickhead just got better and better the longer it went on. Champion coming in on his big prime truck. KO hyped by the new IC champion Sammy backstage moving the night before we follow him out through Gorilla, his Titantron glowing in ECW colours, the Canadian eyeing up Paul's truck and fetching a golf cart with KO attached to it, then using that golf cart to escort Randy Orton down to the ring. Which also, in terms of people who haven't really watched the build, it immediately goes like, okay, so these two have got some form of camaraderie. Logan Paul's tactics not working, as both Owens and Orton would rather beat him up than first than fight each other. Taking it in turns to body drop Paul onto the Spanish announce desk, Orton teaching him how to properly do the drop, nice little funny moment. The champion completely unable to convince the other two to fight each other, but the championship itself certainly can. Logan Paul still has no right to hit such a good buckshot. Like, damn you, Logan Paul. The fans chanting Gatorade, Powerade, and We Want Water at him in full disrespect. The second half of this match at such a great pace. Paul having had enough and resorting to the nooks, but on the grand stage it finally doesn't work. KO and Orton recovering from nook shots. Paul from an RKO. Everybody down. As Orton just kindly hands the nooks over to the ref once he gets back up. Like, oh, that's kind of him. Because he's just going to punt the lad. If it wasn't for that darned prime bottle. This time, it's not KSI. It's Ice Show Speed. Everything he said having to be bleeped out. But his facial expressions have always been so good. Hilarious RKO onto the announce desk to Ice Show Speed. Back into the ring, an amazing move of pop-up powerbomb countered into an RKO. Awesome spot, but Paul in to stop the pin, Orton into ring post and to the outside, frog splash for the win, Paul drinking prime with his title and ring match sponsor. I really enjoyed this match. It, for me, it just got better and better the more it went on. But when it did the whole prime bottle spot, I was like, yep, yeah, it's happened at a peak point of this match as well, and it's a perfect level of distraction. You think that KO is going to get the title from it, but instead you get an amazing counter, and then that's what lets Logan Paul back in. I thought it was done really, really well. Then brings us to another match I really enjoyed. The WWE Women's Championship. Io Shirai versus Bayley. Egyptian goddess Bayley carried out by four big oiled up boys. Good for her. But my god, WWE need to get Death Rebel out here ASAP. That entrance music. Good god. Yet another, whatever the opposite of a banger is. Io's entrance, however, I loved. Perfect. No notes. The way they shot it was so great too. Especially with the way that they had the camera rocking back and forth. I thought it looked amazing. The match was great too. Both women so fluid together. Which, to be honest, I really shouldn't be surprised about given the talent involved. Like, so awesome this happened at WrestleMania as well, on this stage. Like, hey, Bayley. Sung out practically all match. Seemingly only getting louder as the match went on. Io with some awesome Germans. The challenge for Bayley being overcoming her tweaked knee. Like getting her knees up, only for the weight of the moonsaulting Io to hurt her just as much. Whilst Io not only literally flew, but also flew in with some damn great counters and transitions. Shirai, an absolute beast, the final third really giving her the room to showcase. a gear we've never really seen her given the go-ahead to switch into for the main roster. Evidently working well as the crowd were up on their feet behind Bayley for a comeback, standing for the elbow drop, Rose plant and count to three. Bayley is your new women's champion. Really fun match. This was a very different style of match, and it's not the kind we've seen be showcased through the women's division before on this stage, so it was great to see. And that was night two. As you can tell, like the way I'm just talking about it, for me, each night had a definite weak point. However, night two was so much better paced, and that main event, the sheer fact that the question is happening, that is this main event the greatest main event ever, tells you in how high regard it's being talked about. It's the fact that the WrestleMania 40 show overall was as good as it was, and then the main event happened, like, it makes a lot of sense that this is going to be doled out in a very, very strong manner. All-timer WrestleMania night. And they gave the fans their moment, and they did it in an incredible manner after such a long build-up as well. Like, it really paying off. A thing that we've just haven't seen in WWE such a long time, seeing such a long championship reign, a guy be so dominant, breaking so many modern-day records, and then you give over the heat well as well. Like, whenever WWE, in the last decade or so, whenever they've done a dominant kind of character and reign, they've just not paid it off. Or any long-serving story, just he just knew it was never going to turn up into anything. Looking at you, Raw GM. Looking at you, whatever Eric Redbeard had in his... It was a spider thing he had in his little cage thing. It's just like, you knew from minute one it was going to be shit. You knew from minute one. Anyway, speaking of, let's go over to the Raw after Mania. How do they follow it up with? Now that they would have the most eyes they've had in a long time, and the Raw viewership number for this was a really strong number. If it was over like 3 million. Like a really strong Raw after Mania number. What do? When they've got that many eyeballs returning or new ones coming to their products, what kind of Raw did they put on? Well, let's play the clip.
On Saturday, I also said, welcome to a new time. Welcome to a new era. So right now, I would like you all to welcome the man that will lead us in to that new era. Please welcome the brand new, undisputed WWE Champion, the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes!
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
The Triple H era is indeed here. It's the first call of the show, bringing out Cody Rhodes, playing a VTR on Cody's career and vice, set to rise up, making Rhodes cry, bruh. Well, we know Floyd must have been a mess. And the man was literally their life. Cody, the ultimate babyface, acting emotional over his daughter to amp up the crowd into a loud cheer for undesired to undeniable to undisputed. Cody, the ultimate babyface. When If You Smell hits again, a long entrance posing in every single corner, and really taking his time to soak in that atmosphere. As soon as that dies down, the crowd met him with Undertaker chants, because wrestling fans are dicks. Turns out they were just getting started, because a lot of they were chanting was getting cut off. Shut the F up was playing quite a hot theme. The crowd, white hot to chant shit, just as strong as Rocky was talking it. The man eventually calming down and getting to the point, congratulating Cody before cutting to alluding to challenging him. An awkward handover as they each held each other's belts to the chance crowd chanting, "This is awkward." Rocky's going to disappear for a while, but Rock versus Cody has been dangled. Rock did pin him on night one of WrestleMania, and that is now being used as a launching pad for a future match. And Cody was talking with, "You're my boss, but I'm the champion. I'm their champion. And boss, that means I'm your champion." Which is a line which works even better when they've just spent like 15 minutes tying your emotion for Cody winning like to the man himself there in the ring, watching him get emotional over his career retrospective. Again, tying emotion to the actual person. It's smart telly doing. Putting something into Cody's hand as people on Twitter go, have I just witnessed a drug deal? Like, you don't have to open your hand to know what this is. Don't ever break my heart again if you know what the final boss is cooking. Delivered calm and serious. The segment ending in the polar opposite manner to how it started, with it just the white hot support for Cody, tying the fans' emotion to Cody having his emotional moment too as well. Then The Rock comes out and the crowd are electric, and you got that amazing back and forth between Rock and the just white hot crowd. The crowd's so behind Cody as well, just wanting to rip on The Rock. However, this segment was 47 minutes. No ad breaks, just a straight 47 minutes from Triple H coming out to The Rock walking away was 47 minutes. That is a long time. The show getting its walking into the arena production when we're already near the end of the first hour. It was certainly unique. I did enjoy, so the other caveat to that is, I did enjoy this segment, and that first 47 minutes absolutely flew by. There is that asterisk, but there is a lot of time. 47 minutes is a long time, and when something like this happens, you have to brace for the next 2 hours. And in my humble opinion, 47 minutes straight with no ad breaks led to a great 47 minute segment in the WWE style on their show. However, was it worth the next 2 hours having ad breaks every 2 minutes? I said I did watch the Raw After Mania live. I never watch wrestling live, not even AEW or anything. Like, I very rarely tune in live. I just don't stay up for this stuff. And then when I watched Raw live, I was like, oh God, no, yeah, this is why I never stay up specifically for Monday Night Raw. This is why I don't stay up for this. First 47 minutes, had a ball. It absolutely flew by. Great time. Next 2 hours, some of the slowest of my life. Like, just to a point where it started to feel like a chore getting through this show. For the rest of this show, it was just so much ad breaks. You had, like, I thought that Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ilya Dragunov was a really strong way to just carry that momentum. Sucks for Shinsuke. However, he did a great job of making Ilya look awesome. And that match brought that Raw after WrestleMania feeling right back. Vince killed that vibe dead, like the moron he is. Like, he didn't actually like money. It turns out he loves throwing money away, as we've learned. Like, commentary staging this as a WWE draft talent showcase for Ilya. The draft taking place on April 26th. Ilya winning with a H-bomb stiff forearm strike, which set up the Torpedo Moscow, as Nax is trusted to make the lad look as great as he can. I thought he's done a really good job of just creating that Raw WrestleMania feel. After that, it kind of just dissipated a bit. We had the Judgment Day celebration, we had more NXT people coming up, there was the Intercontinental Champion stuff, there was Jade Cargill, then there was the main event. But it felt like after this point, and I feel like as well, the sheer number of adverts, it just meant that the flow of the show just kind of died. It's the criticism I've heard of SNL. It feels like you're watching adverts with a bit of SNL in between. But that's what this was. You were watching hours of adverts with a little bit of Monday Night Raw every now and then. Over here in the UK, you get adverts every 15 minutes. In America, they'll be like 3 minutes, but they're more often. Whilst over here, they're 5 minutes, but they're once. If you're watching a half-hour show, you'll get adverts 15 minutes in, then you'll get adverts after you finish the show. You get 5 minutes, and that's it. So it's a longer break, but it's only one. It's only one in that half an hour period. And if you're watching a one-hour show, you'll get one every 15 minutes. My telly viewing experience is conditioned for a five-minute advert break every 15 minutes to then get an advert break after, like, 2 minutes of me being back on the show, and I'm right back into adverts. I'm just like... And it's happened multiple times. Like, it wasn't just once. I was like, I swear it's been 2 minutes before our last ad break. Like, it just became absurd over the next 2 hours. We got a ad-free first hour, which was great for that first hour, but utterly detrimental to the rest of the show. My viewing experience died so quick. After the Ilya Dragunov match, I hated this show with a passion. Just wanted it to be over. I'll talk about the other stuff. Indy Hartwell faced NXT Women's Champion Roxanne Perez, who won at Stand and Deliver. Our other NXT talent showcase, Kenneth's getting involved too, to pure goody Indy's dismay. Perez taking advantage to hit Pop Rocks, Code Red for the win. Decent little showcase for Roxanne Perez. Both NXT champions getting wins on the main roster as well. That was also something that didn't used to happen. Because you build into the future. Makes sense. You've got a draft coming up. Chelsea Green beaten up by Jade Cargill. I just love this. The Jade squash, it worked in AEW, so why fix what ain't broken? Built to impress in a WWE telly wrestling debut, right into a big boot and jaded for the win. In terms of the segments of more substance, we did get three. The Judgment Day celebration. This did also lead to me sitting there at like 2:30 in the morning doing my, what am I doing with my life as I'm in and out of adverts with a match I'm not invested in. Dom introduced women's champion Rhea Ripley. Finn, our new men's top dog, Damian Priest, holding their titles up to all rise for the Judgment Day, only for R-Truth to also step in and raise his Raw Tag Team title. I did enjoy that. Opening the conversation about The Miz joining Judgment Day, even though it's not a conversation anybody's having. Balor immediately challenging them to a tag title match. Instead, Truth accepting a six-man tag with them and their third man that you can't see. The crowd initially chanting Little Jimmy, before they eventually catch on that there might maybe be a different invisible friend. But the Judgment baddies stompy stomp before poor Ron can call him out. Which led us into Awesome Truth versus Judgment Day and my semi-midnight breakdown. Back from the break into this was also part of the production format. We have a match set up and then back into the break, the match has already started, it's already underway. He says that this happened more than once. It's like, oh, okay. Got so many ad breaks that the pattern is repeating as well. Like, don't worry though, we came back from the break into this 2v3 handicap match, but it wasn't long before we were back into another one. That's this second hour paying for that ad-free first. Cena's music finally hitting when Judgment Day are cockily flexing over Miz. Three drops setting up three shuffles, or 15 knuckle shuffle as Cole called it. Three double A's and the crowd cheers all happy clappy in the face of fun. Yeah, this was a segment which made me think about things. It's made me... I had a lot of time to, you know, because of the amount of adverts, but it's just a thing about life and just what one could be doing differently. I mean, I would have been asleep, so I wouldn't have been doing much. But, you know, you can think about it. The new Intercontinental Champion, Sami Zayn, out to celebrate with the people after ending Gunther's all-time reign. Kaiser and Vinci out before Sami can list the roll call. Conveniently, Sami's in his gear. Chad Gable stopping the 2-on-1 and taking us into a lovely tag match. Sami Zayn and Chad Gable versus Imperium. I haven't got a lot to say here. Decent little showing off our goodies working together as we are moving into Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable, which is set up backstage afterwards. And the ending as well was really smooth. The Haluva kick setting up the Chaos Theory for the win. Oh, one a kick into the corner and one a roll out of it. Makes a lot of sense. Flow-wise, it really works. That got them the win, obviously, and then set us up for them to set up their title match next week. But I will also say that at that point, kind of just waiting for... I just needed the show to finish. I needed to be done. I'd had enough. The main event, number one contender for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, Ricochet versus Jey Uso versus Drew McIntyre versus Bronson Reed. Drew, in a big strop, a promo before the other lads came out, calling WrestleMania BS. And the match itself, Drew the one to introduce the table after the break. Yes, obviously after the break. Big boy Bronson crashing us into the next break. I'm not even sure that there was 2 minutes between breaks. The big lad taking it in turns, tossing around Paul Richard. Chants of meat as they exchange chops, that chant remaining over after starting in AW. Ricochet down for the tsunami, but Drew's there to stop the play. The big lads play with a Spanish announce desk, instead setting up Ricochet to fly with a springboard 450. Like, oof, that looked painful as Ricochet's stomach lands on the front of the desk as it breaks. Just like stomach first. Like, oh, that did not look comfortable. I did like how, as he set up to do the 450, he looks over to his wife, Samantha Irving, and he goes, sorry. apologise for what he's about to do and what he's about to do to him. Yeah, did look painful. McIntyre with the match won, but out is CM Punk to grab his ankle. Uso kicking him down and a splash for the win. Jey Uso is your number one contender who will face Damian Priest. Also, that directly takes us into CM Punk Drew McIntyre. The laugh on CM Punk's face was great. The way that he showed the, like, oh, cheeky, cheeky. I'm all for wrestlers doing cheeky, cheeky. They're just like, you cheeky monkey. In terms of production, all in a single shot with no cuts. Ripley was attacked backstage after a chinwag with Dom about Andrade. Liv jumping in with her surprise attack on the champion. Dom, then telling the cameraman to go away, pushes the camera. Cameraman just keeps on walking into the arena all the way to ringside. Also, like the stuff of the wide panning shots showing the size of the crowd. They were also great. Triple H came out and the camera span around him. Anyway, this has been a much longer bumper episode. I don't know how long the edited version is going to be. I'm recording a day earlier to try and get as much editing time as I can. Anyway, with that I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. All bets that after I've talked about that, even though I've recorded like 90 minutes worth of material, watch it be 30 minutes. Well, if you just cut it right down, you get your basic ass bitch show. And I've called it the bumper WrestleMania episode and everything. Anyway, I'll be back next week with your normal 30 minutes. Don't get used to this shit. Don't get used to it. Don't get too greedy, guys. With that, I bid you adieu. Adios.